This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Heather Pyle Lucas, winemaker at the Lucas Winery.
You go way back as a winemaker, don't you, Mondavi?
I do. I think I counted 37th vintage. My first vintage actually was in a lab in 1982, and I pretty much made wine every year since then. So yeah,
you were involved Opus One up in Northern California.
I was involved in Opus One, but I started at Mondavi in '85, and at that time they were making Opus One at the original Mondavi facility. There was no Opus facility, so being a red winemaker, my mentor was a red winemaker, so I became a red winemaker, and so I was really peripherally involved.
How did you get into wine? I've always been curious about that. You were so young. I mean, accident?
Or? It's pretty much accident, but going to UC Davis, doing a zoology degree, wanting to be a veterinarian, and in my very last quarter, looking to see how to fill out my Mickey Mouse classes, I took the wine class. I did not find it to be a Mickey Mouse class at all. It took itself rather seriously, and I fell in love with it. I never thought about wine before that. I happened to have a boyfriend at the time who was an electrician. He was working in a winery doing electrical work, and it just sort of enlightened me that there were people who made wine and there were different positions in wineries, and I just started to get interested, did a couple internships, one in Australia and one here, and applied to grad school. And I've loved it. I have a hard time explaining it, but it's actually similar to working with animals in that lack of control, that sort of you have to let things go and be what they are.
It's pretty cool. Let them speak to you.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's a good way of putting it, right.
One of the things that you hear about throughout the state of California is Lodi rules. Speak to that and maybe contrast a little bit with SIP. Certified.
I'm not as well versed in SIP, but I can talk versus sort of the other programs. So Lodi Rules actually began in the Central Coast. It was the Central Coast Sustainable Wine Growing Program. And David, my husband, was very involved with the beginning of that. That
is
would
that
have been
at Cal Poly? Were the
not actually thing? Based at the university, but based with the growers in the Salinas Valley, interested in becoming more earth-friendly and then also staying ahead of the PR curve of what was people knew was coming. And when you're close to veg crops, you're probably more aware of what this means. So it actually started in the Central Coast all the way through the book, The Binder, that tells you how to start being a sustainable grower. And then when Lodi took it on, they basically renamed it and kept a lot of the original structure because it had a lot of collaboration behind it. And so Lodi Rules then became, because we are such a large appellation, the benchmark for it. But it's not unlike the Central Coast system.
Interesting, because even though today it is branded in everybody's mind as Lodi Rules,
yes.
I'm in very dissimilar AVAs around California, and they are mentioning Lodi Rules as the benchmark.
Right, and so that's, we owe credit to our leader at the Wine Grape Commission, Mark Chandler, back in the 90s, just very proactive in thinking about how that should work. So instead of taking on the sustainable program from the Central Coast and calling it that, he said, well, we're going to make our modifications.
But yours were stricter, I seem to recall.
It may be a little bit stricter. The thing that differentiates a lot of the sustainable programs from things like, well, I shouldn't say SIP because I'm not well enough versed, but certainly the organic programs, is that the sustainable programs are more comprehensive. They include worker safety, worker health, sustainability in the financial sense. Mm-hmm. So it's not just all about applications, which organic tends to be way more about applications, and I think some of these other green systems are as well.
Isn't there kind of a mushiness factor with the word sustainable?
Well, it's a bit murky. It's true that the public does not embrace sustainable the way it does organic. And what often happens with the sustainable programs, but I think this is a good thing, is that you can participate in the program even if you don't do X, Y, and Z. If you're moving towards X, Y, and Z, you can be called sustainable. And some people have a problem with that because it means that some are participating at a higher level. But I think you need to bring people along. And organic can be alienating because it's a little overwhelming sometimes.
And then it's one thing looking out at your field, you make these organic grapes, but then it's harder to come out the other end.
That's right.
With an organic wine.
That's right.
Explain about this, that
right.
Disconnect.
So there are lots of levels of confusion. We do bottle wine made from organically grown grapes. We're not allowed to put it on the label because we have not certified our facility. If you certify your facility, it just means that there are certain products that you can use and certain that you can't. It's not very stringent, but you have to go through a lot more paperwork.
And pay fees.
And if you want to make organic wine, you can't use any sulfur dioxide.
Which is a naturally occurring compound.
Correct. And it's, in our opinion, an essential part of ageable wines. We just poured the 2001 Chardonnay. We would not be looking at a 2001 Chardonnay if there was no such thing as sulfur dioxide. It is an essential preservative. It's safe. It's healthy for most of the population.
But it's a natural organic. So it's purely a matter of parts per million, right?
Right. And so if you want to bottle wine from organically grown grapes and you don't want to be organic in the no sulfur sense, you can only have 100 parts per million total. It's not difficult to stay below that level. That's just saying be reasonable, use sulfur. We use it in the field, even for organic. We use it in the wine for organically grown. But you can't use it if you're making organic wine because the public insists on that. That's not true in Europe. Organic wine in Europe is organically grown. It does not mean it has no sulfur in it. So it's rather difficult here. And it becomes very confusing to the public.
Unequal playing field.
That's right. Yeah. What I'm really proud of in this last couple of years, I've been listening to David for many years give me all the winemaking credit. But I started to realize relatively recently how important his collaboration with me is and how we spend a lot of time getting it right by bouncing ideas off each other, and he's often not given himself enough credit for that. I think we make better wines together than we would individually, and I'm really proud of that. And I really rely on him a lot for the vineyard. I don't even really spend much time in the vineyard except for the pest stuff.
And your pest management, owl boxes, and do you introduce any beneficial insects?
Yes, we do. And so we've been using predator mites for a long time. We have a big mite problem here with the heat and the dust in the summer. We have mealybug, and there are no organic treatments for it. We're starting to use these little ladybugs, and they're introduced in the cool morning, and David and I did it last time just to experience it. They seem to be doing their job. We seem to be making progress. We'll never get rid of either of those things, but if you can just have diversity out there, that's a good thing. You can see our vineyard right now is a little bit bronzy looking, but if we're really proactive about applying the predator mites, we don't even have the bronziness, and we have yet to have any mealybug problems on the fruit. We just see it on the trunks. We introduce a ladybug, and so far, so good. So crop loss in organic for us has not been a problem. Maybe we thin a little bit more because we know we have competition underneath the vines, but that would be about it.
These are old vines, pretty stumpy stalks.
Yeah, 1933, so it won't be that long before they're 100 years old. So these were planted just at the end of Prohibition, originally on a 10x10 spacing and now on a 10x5.
What is your lexicon? When people think of your winery, what do they think of?
When they think of our winery, they think of education a lot because that's a visitor experience. And wine-wise, I think they think of food-friendly, restrained wines, hopefully on the lower alcohol side of the district.
Not rocket fuel.
Right, yeah. Right.
And real quick, the different varietals that you're known for. You do a killer Chardonnay, I know that.
Right, so Chardonnay. Zinfandel is our primary wine. That's what we grow. But we do make Chardonnay, and we make a wine club wine every year, but it rotates. We make a rosé of Zinfandel as well, and a late harvest of Zinfandel, but we're mainly Zinfandel focused. And my name is Heather Pyle Lucas.
Heather, thank you. What a great morning.
Thank you.
All right. Come on,
David Lucas from the Lucas Winery.
David, here we are in Lodi, California. And you've been here, what, since the 70s?
Since the 70s, when I left Iran, where I was managing Peace Corps program in Iran, came to Lodi and bought the vineyard and started making wine.
And how did you wind up choosing Lodi?
Lodi really chose me because I was buying fruits and vegetables throughout the Central Valley, everything from asparagus to zucchini, and settled in Lodi, which is just an incredible, pleasant place, and learned so much about the growers that have been here for 4 and 5 generations, and also Lodi's unique climate. Everybody thinks of Lodi and the Central Valley as being, you know, just shy of Death Valley in terms of heat, but we're so close to the delta that we get those cooling breezes coming in from the Cartenas Straits.
So you truly do have maritime environmental effects.
Absolutely. So what happens is that maritime influence comes in through the Cartenas Straits, comes across the delta, two-thirds heads towards Bakersfield and one-third towards Sacramento and Red Bluff, and it picks up the heat from the valley floor. So you'll have a barbecue out here at 6 o'clock, and you'll see the ladies putting on light sweaters.
During the summer.
Right. And it's the reason that we could grow the famous flame tokay, which you'd be hard-pressed to find in Lodi today, great table grape, because it needed the exchange of the warm days and the cool nights to develop the coloring pigments, because it only had two pigments. Chardonnays only have one. Zins, Cabernet have three.
Going way back, 100 years ago or more, this was a prime, premier growing region in California.
A lot of crops, watermelons, cantaloupes, peaches. I mean, I can only imagine that when the covered wagons came over the Sierras and they looked into this area with all of its natural water, and then the growers themselves built Lodi Lake, and it has eight canals coming out from it. So all of the vineyards back then were under gravity flow and furrow irrigated, and it's still a remarkable source of water. And it's one of the reasons that our water table hasn't been going down, is because those canals leak like a sieve. And so my standing water, and this will hurt people down in the Central Coast, but our standing water is at 45 and 46 feet, and it's still there after 45 years.
That's an exception. Even down Fresno, in that area, they have an aquifer that's going down drastically.
Yeah, we really have to develop the two reservoirs that are on the books, because we don't have the snowpack anymore. As everybody knows, we are really getting more runoff, and we have to get that runoff.
Back in the day, say 50, 60 years ago, this was a major producer of the flame tokay grape, which was a table grape. There was a game shift. What happened?
What happened was that the Mondavi family, Robert Mondavi and his children Tim and Michael, came to Lodi and purchased the Woodbridge Winery and started expanding there and doing the research necessary in the vineyards to understand the viticultural practices that influence wine quality. There's been a huge disconnect. Even up at Davis, the two departments didn't necessarily talk to themselves. The viticultural department was interested in tons because they were driven by the grower, and the winemaking department was interested in improving California's wine quality and image. But the viticultural department, never that I know of, went to the winemaking department and said, we have this new clone or selection of Cabernet, make wine out of it and let us know what you think, and that they would be the final vote as to whether it went to the growers. So we had to learn a lot about trellising and spacing and irrigation management, deficit irrigation in Lodi, and the Mondavis were really the factor that influenced so much of what the growers do today. So the growers are very closely aligned now, especially now that we have 86 wineries here, small wineries that are out in the vineyards looking at the fruit, advising the grower on strategy for the type of wines that they're trying to make.
Since your incarnation as a grower and a producer dates from the 70s, you were, looking back, a pioneer. There were, what, six wineries in the whole AVA?
Yeah, we were like number three to come along, and people thought it was really a silly idea. And, you know, we have a saying here that people say, well, I've never had a Lodi wine before, which has become less and less of a problem. Mm-hmm. And we say, no, but you've been drinking them forever. Right. So Lodi has the largest acreage of Cabernet and Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc, and you can name almost any variety, and Lodi has it.
This is in the state of California.
In the state of California, and in the hands of really, really great growers. I mean, these are growers, again, five generations of grape growing. You don't create that off the shelf. And Zinfandels, too. Zinfandel, Lodi has the largest acreage of old head prune Zins in the world, even more than Bari, Italy, where it's referred to as Primitivo.
Incredible. That really is amazing. Lodi produces more grapes in total than any other AVA in the state of California, too?
Yes, that's correct.
In prior iteration, Lodi, as we all know, 70s, even 80s, if I mentioned Lodi to somebody, your first association would be bluntly grocery store wine.
Right, right, and heat, you know. But it's really a great climate for growing grapes. Lodi is very benign in terms of its climate and the growing conditions, and we have such an abundance of water. In the early days, grapevines in Lodi were never irrigated.
It was all dry farm.
All dry farm, because the water table was at 15 to 22 feet. You could hand dig your own well back then.
You know, a lot of people don't know the roots of a vine can travel 60 feet down. So that being said, I assume that a lot of your vines took care of themselves as seeking out their water.
Yeah, right. Back then, now everybody is on drip irrigation because growers were told to conserve water, and so they did that. The challenge to that, though, is now we're not recharging the groundwater table, you know, because Lodi has such sandy soils. I always like to tell people, I swear, on the other side of the earth, that the soils are so deep and sandy in Lodi, in China, there's a really great beach to surf.
Thanks to you guys. Yeah. Interesting, but there is still some dry farming going on here.
There is still some dry farming.
Do you do any?
No, the vines just can't tolerate it.
What are you known for? What is your star wine that you do the best at?
Well, I think Lodi is known for its Zinfandels, and it has a range of styles, everything from the big bombs to the more claret style, which is our preferred style, more ageable and really friendlier at the table with food. Also, you know, Chardonnays in Lodi, we're finding we can do a really great job. As you know, you're going to be tasting a 13-year-old Chardonnay that Heather made, which people just think is remarkable. But if you get the right vineyard in the right soils, and especially with the grower is what really influences the quality in Lodi. And if you can pay him enough money so that he can afford to stay in business at 3 tons and leaf removal, you know, and the different trellising system and high density vineyards and deficit irrigation, the grower is really the key here because the soils are fairly uniform throughout Lodi.
So even though they might be dropping a lot of fruit, you're paying them a premium to compensate.
Right. We pay a significant premium over the market price.
So you guys have two worlds as a family. You have a getaway in Cayucos, California on the beach. So that becomes kind of your brain cleansing getaway? Or?
Yeah, Cayucos is just wonderful, and I spend a lot of time in the water at the Rock, and then...
You're a surfer.
What's left of one. Then each November after Thanksgiving, we go to the North Shore and rent a house to attend the Vans Triple Crown. But I fell in love with Cayucos when I went to school at Cal Poly, and my son went there as well. And my dad went there when it was all guys. So, and then became responsible for when I joined the Mondavi organization, when they were just growing as a company, responsible for their global wine supply and their joint ventures. And so that put me into the Central Coast because that's where really the greatest opportunity was to grow. And so farmed about 4,000 or 5,000 acres for the family. I didn't farm it personally, but had managers.
This was in Edna Valley or in Paso?
This was everything from Santa Maria up to Salinas.
Talk specifically about your label and your wines and what you produce and the fact that if somebody went out looking for your wine in Cayucos or San Luis Obispo, they probably wouldn't find it.
They used to be able to find it in Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo and Carmel and Santa Barbara and San Francisco. But I just wasn't doing what I like to do, which is farm and make wine and have my legs dangling off the side of a surfboard.
So your choice, a shift.
It's really a choice, you know, except for the fact that surfboards and airplane tickets are costing more and more money. It works. It works financially.
But you're still making and producing as much wine as you ever did, right?
Right.
But you got to come to the source.
It's all direct, right. Or online, they can go online and order our wines as well.
I know you've got to have a real strong underpinning of wine club members because that's a no-brainer to cut costs.
Yeah, it's about two-thirds through our subscribers and one-third is from people who walk in.
The breadth of what you produce.
We do Zinfandel and a Chardonnay. The Chardonnay Heather crafts to age for 8 to 10 years. We have Zins going back to 1975 and 76. That are really fun to open up and tell wild stories. And that's what old guys get to do, is tell a lot of really great stories. Also, we do a rosé from Zinfandel, and then each year Heather produces wine just for our subscribers, a Pinot Noir or a Barbera or Sauvignon Blanc. So,
but again, not all estate-produced, but all AVA right here.
It's all estate-produced. And
it is. So you do not source any outside grape?
Oh, yes, in that sense we do. Yeah, what we have here is only Zinfandel. And these vines were planted right at the end of Prohibition.
Old vines.
Old vines. Old vines for old minds.
David, thanks for sharing. David, for further information, where would somebody go to find out more about you guys?
Go to lucaswinery.com, Lodi, California. And my name is David Lucas from the Central Coast.
I love it. David, thanks for sharing. And I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Lodi, California. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others. I think I've had enough. Come on, wine, wine, wine. Do your stuff. Come on, wine, wine, wine. Do your stuff.